Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 8th day of September 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. We'll take a look forward at the WASDE and crop production report that's due out on the 11th day of this month. That's Thursday at 11 a.m. We'll discuss the weather forecast, that with the folks at Earth Risk Technologies up in Chicago, Illinois, and talk about the marketing of corn and soybeans on the cash side with the guys out at the Andersons facility right here in Champaign County as we make our way through this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check the numbers now as they finished up on this Monday afternoon in Chicago. Nearby September corn today at $3.39 and a quarter, down 7 and a quarter for the afternoon. December contract at $3.48 and a quarter, 7 and 3 quarters lower. And the March futures at $3.61 and a quarter were 7.5 cents lower. May futures in the corn pit at $3.69 and three quarters, down 7 and a quarter. And the July 7.5 lower, $3.76 and three quarters. December futures from the corn pit $3.93 and a half, 7 cents lower on the day. From the soy complex, bean futures $10.90 and three quarters of a cent. The settlement price in the nearby September up 5 and a quarter for the afternoon. November on out were lower, $10.08 and a half for the November, down 13. January 12 and three quarters lower at $10.15 and a half. March 10.22 down 13. The May at 10.27 and three quarters, 13 and a quarter lower. July down 14 at $10.33 and a quarter, and November futures of next year at $10.20 and a quarter, down 16.5 cents. Bean meal futures finished up $10.10 in the nearby September at $4.46.20. October down $4.20. Bean oil for the day at $32.03 in the lead. September down 32. October down 32 as well as $31.96 on the afternoon. Chicago wheat finished at $5.33 and a half, and that was up 2 cents for the day. Livestock and live cattle futures $158.55 in the October, down $1.20. The feeder cattle finished the September at $227.12 and a half, up $1.40. October at $225.70, $1.32 and a half higher on the afternoon. And lean hogs for the day were down $2.57 and a half for the October at $103 and a nickel. This is Illinois Public Media.
Today's programming is made possible in part by the Friends of WILL and by Country Financial Representative Scott Jackson, Village at the Crossing in Champaign, committed to helping clients achieve peace of mind in retirement through effective planning. Online at scottjacksonfinancial.com.
Checking the outside markets at this hour, crude oil futures for the day in the October at $92.75 a barrel. They're down 54 cents for the afternoon. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.81. That's 8 tenths, eight-tenths of a cent lower on the afternoon for the diesel fuel. Gasoline and the RBOB are the wholesale price at $2.56 and a tenth. That's 2 and 2 tenths of a cent lower. Natural gas for the day at $3.88 and three tenths, up 9 cents on the afternoon. And ethanol futures at $1.98 and seven tenths. That's the October contract, 2 and 4 tenths of a cent lower. Checking the other outside markets as we trade the Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 17,089, down 29 points. Gold at $1,254 or thereabouts, $11.50 lower, and the dollar index at 84.23. That's up 0.478 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Sunny skies, a high of 80 degrees. It's beautiful outside on a south wind at about 7 miles an hour tonight. Mostly clear and a low of 55. Tomorrow, sunny and 83. Tuesday evening, a 30% chance of showers. Some thunderstorms will come after 1 a.m. Central Time. Mostly cloudy on Tuesday night with a low of 68 degrees. And on Wednesday, occasional showers, a few thunderstorms, a high near 80 degrees. Breezy south winds at 15 to 20 miles an hour. And then Wednesday evening, a 50% chance of showers before 1 a.m. Mostly cloudy and a low of 56. We'll have more on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with the folks at Earth Risk Technologies in Chicago.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report. It is the 8th day of September 2014. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line this Monday afternoon, Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Kurt, how are you doing today?
Doing good. Thank you, Todd.
Well, tell me about what you're hearing from farmers. I suspect some have decided to at least shuck an in-row off just for fun. Have they been finding anything good?
Well, thus far, early reports have been surprisingly pleasant. It's all over the place, but mostly towards the upper end. Still a little wet in some areas, but, these yields are phenomenal. The Delta, big yields in beans, Alabama, big yields corn, Kentucky, Tennessee, the upper 200s in some areas. But the harvest activity is moving further north here. There's been some activity here in central Illinois. And yield potential remains favorably strong. And it kind of signifies that maybe on Thursday here we'll see a bigger production number, Todd.
Well, I did see that the average trade guess, I think, for the ending stocks for the 14-15 crop year, that'd be the year we're in right now, the harvest month, our harvest that we're about to do, is set at about 2 billion bushels. That's 200 million bushels higher than what USDA pegged it in August. But I'm thinking that might be just about where the trade had been trading. What's your thought on what we'll see on Thursday at 11 a.m.?
Yeah, I think the numbers are going to be a little bigger. I don't know if we'll see the great big numbers some of these guys are looking at, but SC Stone numbers is probably about the largest number we'll see. It indicates that we're probably going to be in this lower $3 level on corn and dip below the $10 level on beans here at some point in time. But the function of the market is to see if demand can come forward here. So far, the demand side's kept their hands in their pockets for the most part. We did see China purchase 120,000 tons of U.S. beans. We just need to see them do more than just their regular routine purchasing. But demand's the key in through here, and that might be a little concern in the marketplace, too, with the stronger dollar, because when you look at last year's corn exports and this year's corn exports, the trade's factored in a big pickup in corn exports this coming crop year.
And we did bounce just a little bit from the lows, which we put in recently for the corn pit. Are your expectations that the trade is thinking we've gone low enough at least at this point? And do they have a 2 billion bushel or something bigger than that built into the marketplace for carryout for corn?
Well, I think we're hovering around this 2 billion bushel mark. If we come in above 2 billion bushel, we could go lower. But right now, we're kind of projecting these futures could slip on down to this 330 area. To go much lower than that, we'd probably need to see that carry out move above there. Trade's still optimistic that corn crop's going to be there. But the thing is that a lot of the corn has not been sold. Producers still been hesitant to get caught up on sales. Of course, with these better yields, we'll have a lot more corn to sell. So a lot of it's going to hinge on producer selling habits as we move into this fall.
Where did the pressure come from in the soybean pit today?
Just the fact that, bean harvest is getting going here. We're not seeing Asia step forward to be a big buyer. Meal gave up its gains. A lot of optimism has come out of the meal pit, and the strength there last week was concerns about, the frost freeze concerns, and with the weather maps kind of in not agreement in through here, we kind of took a little bit of that frost freeze fear off the table too. So we'll come in here probably tomorrow and put frost freeze back into the forecast, and this bean market just seems like it just wants to consolidate between $10 on the lower side for the November contract, and seems we're getting that 10:30 area, we find resistance. Some point in time, I would think that trade's going to challenge the $10 to see if there's some stops under that November futures contract level.
Take a look at livestock for me. In particular, feeder cattle, they remain very, very high-priced.
Well, they, same old story, tight numbers. The big supportive features, just the grain market continues to move lower and through here. For those guys buying feeders and trying to market the fat side, it's a awful delicate balance there to work out. When you look at cheaper grain values, instantly people think, well, there's a lot of profitability. But when you're paying up over $2.25 for feeders and this fat market starts to slip, it's kind of hard to get that to balance. So, as long as the grain market stays soft, cattle numbers stay somewhat tied through here, feeders are going to remain firm here for some time to come.
I suppose, all in all, it's just a waiting game until we get to the USDA's WASD and crop production report on Thursday at 11 a.m. now, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to probably chop around through here for a little bit and see what new news there is. But it feels like the market wants to drift in here. A lot of the negativeness is probably going to be on the cash side here. Commercials continue to keep that basis wide for fall delivery. But if you look at basis levels for ash for the first of the year, it starts to improve. And two, when you look at your cash price versus July futures, there's quite a bit of carry in the market place between now and then. So there's some opportunities to do some marketing here to play a little catch-up to add to that bottom line, Todd.
Thank you so much, Kurt. We'll talk with you again in a week.
Okay, take care.
You too. Kurt Kimmel, of course, is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. You can hear him again on our website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. Now here's Dave Dickey with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce says today that China's use of its anti-monopoly law may violate its World Trade Organization commitments. The Chamber of Commerce says in a report released today that China's use of its six-year-old anti-monopoly law has been subjective and that enforcement agencies have skewed its implementation to favor China's own industrial policy and local companies. The Chamber of Commerce goes on to say that using the law to pressure foreign companies to cut prices may violate Article 11.1 of the GATT 1994, which generally prohibits restrictions on the importation of goods. U.S. Treasury Secretary Jacob Lew says the Obama administration will decide in the very near future what actions can be taken to make it less profitable for U.S. companies to shift their legal addresses to other countries. A growing number of U.S. companies are shifting their addresses abroad in an effort to reduce their U.S. taxes. For example, Burger King recently announced its intentions to acquire Tim Hortons and move its corporate headquarters to Canada. The maneuver is known as a corporate inversion. In a speech Monday morning, Lew says these companies are eroding the U.S. tax base and shifting the burden of funding the government to other taxpayers. Lew says Treasury is developing options to make inversions less profitable for companies. The European Bank for Reconstruction and Development today says that Russia's ban on food imported from the European Union and other countries will hinder economic growth in the producer countries as well as Russia itself. The report says that the Baltic states, Norway, Poland, and Hungary are the most vulnerable to the knock-on efforts of the sanctions because food exports make up a greater proportion of their economic output. The Russian Federation introduced a one-year ban on various food products in response to Western sanctions against Moscow. A limit on exports to Russia is also expected to further depress food prices in the European Union. The ban is likely to have an effect on the Russian economy as well, with lower food imports pushing prices higher, fueling inflation by around 2 percentage points. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Visit our website at willag.org, and you'll find all the things we're up to, especially this week. I'm out 3 days, in fact. Tonight, I'll be in Sumner, Illinois, along with Jonathan Kappas to take up the ARC and PLC decision. That starts at 6 o'clock at the Trace Inn there at the Red Hills Lake State Park. The Trace Inn is a restaurant right on the shoreline. Starts at 6 o'clock with Jonathan Kappas. On Wednesday evening, we'll be in Tutopolis at the Knights of Columbus at 6 o'clock again. Gary Schnittke will be along this time for the ARC PLC decision. At Chip Nellinger and Dale Durkholz will be there as well. Chip, of course, with Blue Reef Agri-Marketing and Dale Durkholz of AgriVisor. And then on Thursday night at 6:15, we'll be at the Farm Credit Illinois office in Mount Vernon with Gary Schnittke, Matt Bennett, and Pete Manhart. Matt, a market specialist with Monsanto. Pete from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. So a busy week. You can find all the details on our website at willag.org, or just call your local farm credit office. They'll let you know, too. I hope that we can see you soon. Now, up next, you probably remember that last week the folks at Purdue were kind enough to let me be involved in their Agronomy Day. It was a fantastic program. We talked about a lot of things. I blew the horn for the most part so that they can move from one site to the other. And along the way, I learned a lot about SDS and soybeans. In fact, I spoke with their soybean specialist, Sean Castile. I asked him about the impact of the disease.
Yeah, SDS has been showing up quite a bit. It's going to cause infection whenever you have cool, wet conditions during vegetation, during that vegetative growth. And so we certainly had that. It started really showing up over the last few weeks across the state, and so there's no question that we've got some SDS and some of those issues. Even, you know, we talk about SDS showing up in more of the early planted beans. This year, it really didn't matter because it's about the environmental conditions, cool, wet soil conditions. Memorial planted beans are getting SDS just like the first week of May.
Yeah, and so that I understand some of the background on the SDS, it really does like early planted beans, or, more importantly, cool, wet soils, and usually those are earlier planted soybeans.
Exactly. It's about the field conditions. Cool, wet conditions are going to be prime for SDS infection. So that can be a May 5th planted bean, or like this year, it was a May 25th planted bean, experienced the same kind of issue with cool, wet feet.
Your plant pathologist at the Purdue Agronomy Day on the campus here at the Beck Agricultural Center at Acre split a bean stem and showed us that there was some gray matter in the bottom of the stem, so that if you were unsure in the field, that this might be a good way to go look and say, I'm not sure that this is SDS, could be other problems, but if you open it up, and does it matter what time of year you do that, do you suppose?
Sure.
Or how do you really determine whether you've got SDS?
In terms of SDS, so again, the infection occurs in the early part of the season, really not going to show up until you think of it as a state fair disease. It's typically the August to September is when we're going to see it, and it's going to be expressed in the leaves. So it comes from the root system, toxins are coming up, and then you're going to have interveinal chlorosis and necrosis of the leaf. So as you see that, pull those plants, and just like you talked about, Kirsten, split a stem. You're looking at the cortex, is that kind of that grayish, the brown discoloration, that's going to be SDS. If you have browning in the pith, the very center of that plant, that's brown stem rot, which can also have the same foliar symptoms. So it is key to split those stems and say, do I have brown stem rot or SDS?
And just out of curiosity, you called it a state fair disease. If this showed up at the state fair time, mid-August time, that really has a much larger impact, I believe, on end yield than if it's simply beginning to show up now.
Certainly, you know, that infection showing the symptoms, we'll put it that way, the toxin moving up the plant into the leaves, it's affecting, let's say, that first, second week of August. You've still got a month and a half, 2 months until you're finished out in that crop, whereas now, September 5th, we're looking at some, you know, you've got 15 days. If it's just now showing up, it's not going to be nearly as detrimental because you've got a lot of remobilization of the plant sugars already. Again, you look at the second week of August, you've got a month and a half's worth of time that you're losing out on translocation of those sugars.
If you had to hazard a guess, and I'm going to have you do that, on statewide yield, will SDS have a much of an impact in the state of Indiana this year?
In terms of the SDS impact on soybeans this year, we've had a lot of diseases. I think that we are going to have some issues with it. The vast majority of the crop, we were able to get back into a decent planting window, so we probably had half the crop in the ground by the middle the third week of May. So it probably has been set up for a decent SDS infection. The disease wasn't showing as much foliar symptoms until the latter half of August. So it's going to have an impact, but it's probably not going to be as large as it could have been. I think if we've got those beans that were planted timely, I think we got some fields that were able to get in late April or early May. Those are going to look quite well. Again, what we're looking at today, good prairie soils planted the first week of May. We're looking at 65, 70 bushel beans easily. Those that had to wait until the Memorial Day type planting, we're probably a little bit lower to closer to 50 bushel beans. Again, it goes down to the pod set, number of seeds per pod, and then also seed size. We got hit with all three with that later planted crop. The way we'll finish, the next 10 days are going to make a big difference on the early planted crop. We need the next 3 to 4 weeks to finish strong for the Memorial Day planted crop.
That's Purdue University soybean specialist Sean Castile. I spoke with him last Friday during Purdue's Agronomy Day outside of West Lafayette, Indiana. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's check the cash grain market now, and we'll do that with the folks at the Andersons facility right here in Champaign County. Brian Stark is on the phone line. Good afternoon to you, Brian.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Have you received any shipments of corn directly from the field, and how's it doing?
Well, we've seen a few loads come across the scale today, ranging anywhere from 26% moisture all the way to 31%. So maturation is progressing along, and I imagine as we move forward here in the next couple of weeks, we'll see the corn continue to dry down and more of it to come in the elevator.
Are your expectations that producers will try to harvest early and use your drying capacity, or will they leave it in the field and will you have to temp them?
Well, I think at this point, a combination of both. If there's quick ship bids in the market right now from the processor perspective, so there's an incentive in the basis, but at the corn being this wet, it's probably going to take some drying incentives to come in, which is kind of what we've been doing today and tomorrow to try and generate a little bit of movement up front. But once those go away, I anticipate the producer to be patient and let some of it dry down in the field.
How much of an incentive do you have today and tomorrow?
Right now we have a half price drying that we're moving along here the next couple of days, and that couples with a quick ship basis as well. So there's some incentive ahead of the big rain that we're going to see here middle of the week. But the extended forecast the next 10 days after this week looks pretty dry, so producers will have a chance to get back in the field after that.
When do you think harvest in East Central Illinois will start in earnest?
I think we're probably still a couple weeks away. I think you're going to see some early corn that was planted early come off with some incentives with the quick ship. But for the most part, my guess, and I'm still holding to it, was the week of the 22nd before guys really get rolling.
And what are your bids for the day?
Right now, we are quick ship spot bid 340 corn cash. All fall bid is 321. Quick ship soybean bid is 1218. All fall bean bid is 988 cash. And the new crop July wheat bid is 547.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Brian Stark. He's with the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Joins us on this Monday afternoon to talk about the cash grain market on willag.org and Illinois Public Media. Back in 2 minutes.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
You, of course, are listening to Illinois Public Media.
It's National Date Nut Bread Day. Dates have been cultivated in the Middle East for millennia. Dates were introduced into Mexico and California by the Spaniards by 1765. Date palms can take between 4 to 7 years after planting before they will bear fruit and produce viable yields for commercial harvest between 7 to 10 years. On this day in agricultural history in 1636, the Great and General Court of Massachusetts Bay Colony established Harvard College, the first college in the Americas. In 1790, Canvas White was born. An American engineer, he assisted Benjamin Wright in the building of the Erie Canal. One of his great contributions was discovery of the ability to make cement from limestone along the canal route. And he ultimately received the first U.S. patent for waterproof cement. In 1930, Richard Drew invented the first waterproof, see-through, pressure-sensitive tape. Incidentally, 5 years earlier, Drew observed at a local auto body shop that auto painters had difficulty making clean dividing lines on two-color paint jobs. And after 2 years of effort in the company's labs, he also invented masking tape, a tan paper tape with a light, pressure-sensitive adhesive backing. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
Let's check now the weather forecast on this Monday afternoon. On the phone line is John Davis. He's at Earth Risk Technologies in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, John.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Well, I want to know about this cold weather we were talking about last week. We were a little unsure whether it would really be anything that the marketplace had to worry about. As you look forward, both we need to talk about that and maybe the wet weather conditions across the Midwest.
Sure. Well, from a temperature standpoint, late this week, it's going to be a pretty abrupt change to colder conditions here, starting on Wednesday and Thursday, continuing late this week and into the early portion of the weekend. Certainly going to see 30s across portions of the northwest section of the Midwest. The real issue from a crop perspective is, will we get a hard freeze, and will that affect production and quality? We do not think that any portion of the Midwest will tend to see a hard freeze during this period, again, from Thursday morning through Saturday morning. There will be some areas that get some frost, namely sections of southern Minnesota, far northern Iowa, southwest Wisconsin, into the eastern Dakotas, and the low temperatures there will be anywhere ranging from the mid-30s into the upper 30s across those locales. But even in those areas, we don't expect any kind of a hard freeze. So the bottom line is, we do not see this as a damage event, either in terms of production or in terms of quality, with this event coming up later on this week. Now, as for precipitation across the Midwest, we are going to be on the active side before the colder weather moves in. So really from now through late Wednesday into early Thursday, we will be quite active across the Midwest. But one of the things that the cold air mass is going to do is kind of scour out the moisture across the Midwest, push it into the southern U.S., and thus the Midwest goes dry as we go colder the end of this week, over the weekend, and much of next week. So after a pretty active 3 days across the Midwest, we will see an extended stretch of dry weather here coming up across the belt there, starting the end of this week and continuing into next week.
And very quickly, any other places around the growing regions, the northern hemisphere or the southern hemisphere, that you're concerned about now?
At this stage of the game, no.
Oh, excellent. That is truly good news. Hey, thanks for taking the time with us today. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd.
That, of course, is John Davis. He's at Earth Risk Technologies in Chicago, Illinois. Joins us on this Monday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. You can hear him again on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find our Outlook meetings schedule, and we have three of them this week. If you're wondering about the farm program and how it might impact you as a landowner or a farmer, there are three events. Tonight will be in Sumner, Illinois. That's down near Lawrenceville, so in the southern part of the state of Illinois, and you're invited to come over at 6 o'clock at the Trace Inn. That's in the Red Lake Hills Park outside of Sumner. It's a nice little restaurant there on the shoreline. Looking forward to seeing you there. We'll be in Two Topless at 6 o'clock, same time as tonight, on Wednesday evening at the KFC's, and we'll be in Mount Vernon at 6 o'clock at the Farm Credit Building office on Thursday night. I hope to see you there. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason.